Welcome to this week's edition of our little show called Blind Poppy. It's good to have you with us. And our guest today is a fellow named Jeff Bishop. How are you, sir?
I am great, and how are you?
I'm good as I can be. It's we've had a little cold front come through, which has made things a whole lot better. It started getting hot already in Texas, but this morning it was 50 when I got up. So that's
going to be 90 today.
Oh, man. Where are you? What is your...
Tucson, Arizona. And it's warming up.
It is. Tucson, Arizona. It's kind of a historic town or a town that you think of as a, I don't know, kind of a cowboy town and a kind of a Old West sort of town. Were you? How long have you been there? How did you get there? Tell us about that.
Okay. Well, let's see. I was born in New York, and when I was about 2 years old, I moved out to Tucson because my father and my brother have asthma, and that was the main reason for coming out. Also, the blind school was out here in Tucson as well, and so that was another reason why my parents decided to come here. And so I pretty much, except for a short stint in Long Beach, California, pretty much lived here for the majority of my life.
But they decided that Tucson would be a good place to combat the asthma.
Yeah, and also ASDB, the Arizona State School for the Deaf and the Blind, was in Tucson because they were looking at Phoenix too, and so they decided to move to Tucson, and which is good because that's where I met Carrie, and things turned out quite well.
So the School for the Blind is actually in Tucson?
Yeah, it is actually. There's a School for the Blind in Tucson. Yep. It's definitely not the school that I went to now. It's significantly different.
Oh, they all are nowadays.
Yeah,
they're not.
It's amazing.
They're not blind schools anymore.
No, they're not. No.
It's a different sort of a cover. You know, I was thinking, I don't know if you know, Mel Tillis said, "Send me down to Tucson and I'll get the..." I just think of that song when I think of Tucson. Anyway, what age are you?
I am 39.
39.
Here.
This year. Is that your last, they say your last good one? That's not true.
No, I don't care. I'll tell people I'm 60 when I'm 60. It doesn't matter to me.
It really, that's, life really begins at 40, because then you're old enough to be taken seriously and kind of halfway maybe know what's going on.
Well, I don't know about that, but I hope so.
if one ever really knows what's going on.
That's right, exactly.
So, what is your eye? Are you what vision level do you have?
I was born about 3 months premature, and so my eyes really never developed. So I'm total. I did have some light perception, and I don't have that anymore. And actually, the doctor can't explain why that's in the way. But.
So you did have light perception.
I did, yeah. That was, I actually had it until just about 5 years ago, five or 4 years ago, only in one eye.
Uh-huh.
I did about six eye surgeries on me and was able to at least get that. And then pretty much detached retinas, but the right eye was never really even developed. In fact, it's when I was growing up, it was... I really wasn't one to wear glasses, you know, and mom always tried to have me wear, back in the early 80s, maybe it was even the late 70s, they had these, well, they're pretty common now, but they had color contact lenses.
Uh-huh.
And she'd have me wear these, and because my right eye looks quite a bit different. I you know, when I was younger, I would always get comments from kids, you know, well, why is your right eye all like that, you know?
Yeah, kids can be so cruel.
Yeah, that's okay, though. I mean, it didn't really bother me, you know. It was just, you know, it just took 10 minutes to explain it, you know.
To explain why your right eye looked like that. So you had some very small amount of vision, but that is long gone now.
That's long gone, yeah.
And left you totally blind.
Yep.
Yeah.
I was pretty much total most of my life, except just very little light perception. Uh-huh. Although, you know, it's amazing to me that I still think I have it. And it was only when I went to the eye doctor and he did, you know, about 45 minutes worth of testing to show me that I really didn't have it, that I didn't believe it. It's interesting how you perceive light, even though you can't see it anymore. It's sort of, I don't know, it's very, very strange.
Well, it is, because, you know, sometimes a totally blind person like myself who's never seen light, you kind of feel the warmth of the light, and you think maybe you're seeing it.
But I can definitely tell, like, I used to be able to go around and turn all the lights out in the house, you know, because the kids would leave lights on. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, I'd run around the house, turn all the lights out. I can't do it anymore. But I still think, like, when I go outside and, you know, I still think I can see the sun, although... Doctor tells me I can't. So,
well, if you turned out the light, you'd have to do it by the position of the switches rather than being able
to. Yeah, except my wife bought these dimmer switches.
Oh, man.
Which are, so that makes it even more difficult, but that's all right.
Yeah, there's always the I had a garage light at one time that would intermittently. Sometimes you could, it was a fluorescent light, and you know how they get sometimes, you have to flip them off and on three or four times.
Right.
I always wanted to have the garage light on when my wife came home, so I got a light probe, and I would take that out there and turn the light off and on until I heard the light probe come on, and then I knew that she'd be able to see. I don't want, I'm responsible for that, but I was. anyway, tell us about the childhood when they got ready did you, I guess your parents, you have siblings, I gather?
Yeah, I have one brother, and I don't really remember New York too much. The only thing I remember about New York was falling down my grandmother's cellar steps. And it turns out that was actually the day we were leaving to come to Tucson. And so that's really my only memory of New York when I was, you know, around two. And and then we moved out here, and I remember Tucson on quite a bit from going to, you know, a lot of the places a lot of people go to around here, like Old Tucson and the World National Monument. And I remember growing up, going, getting a little radio there. I'm not sure where that's coming from. Going to the Saguaro National Monument, and they actually had Braille signs to walk you through the Saguaro National Monument. And that was about when I was about five, and I was, of course, just learning to read Braille then, so it was really kind of a struggle. But
yeah,
it was really neat. You know, my parents took me there, and one of the really neat things about my parents was they let me be a kid.
Yeah,
you know, I rode a bike and roller skated around the neighborhood, and you know, just did, you know, skateboarding and did everything that normal kids would do.
Sure.
And my parents actually got called by the neighbors would call Child Protective Services a couple of times we had to deal with this. And they would come out and, you know, they're like, well, you're letting your blind child ride a bike. And, you know, he's smashing into mailboxes and cars and, you know, and my parents were like, yeah, well, so. You know, that's all right.
Did they actually come out to see you?
Yeah, they did, actually. And it was funny because they were outside, and I was about nine, and I was out riding my bike, and my mom was talking to this lady. And all of a sudden, here I come. I'm just hauling down the street on my bike.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom goes, hey, there he is, look. And I'm just, you know, screaming down the street, and I fly by, you know, and I whiz around the corner, and I take off, and she's like, oh, my gosh, you know, and so really nothing ever came of it, obviously, but, you know, she said, well, why don't you have him wear a helmet? So my dad bought me this football helmet, you know, big old football helmet that covered your face and ears, and, of course, that's a really bad thing to do to a blind person, cover their ears.
You bet you refused to wear that.
Well, I tried it once. I tried it one day, and I plowed into my parents' back patio brick wall on my bike and smashed the faceplate off the helmet. And so my dad said he didn't have to wear it anymore.
That's the end of helmet story.
Yeah, right? End of helmet story, yes. It lasted one day. So.
You know, we find every time when we do these, the most permissive parents are the ones who raise the best adjusted blind children. Those parents who just let us be kids and rather than blind kids.
Yeah, and then I got into amateur radio and sort of started my whole geek side of. Got into from there. When I was in high school, the computer classes, because they were, I was being mainstreamed by high school. I was attending ASDB part-time and then also going to Cholla High School. And the high school wouldn't let me take computer classes because they were like, well, how are you going to do that? You know, how is he going to be able to see the screen and, the whole thing?
No, we had no talking anything back then.
Yeah. So we came up with some really innovative approaches to resolving that. And we actually developed a very, very crude screen reader using Morse code on a dumb terminal.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. Actually, it was actually easier to make the printer do Morse code because you could actually programmatically make the printer beep. So it was actually easier to use the printer at first while we were doing testing of this. So we did that, and then we moved it over to the dumb terminal. And, of course, these things didn't have, earphone jacks because obviously they weren't really designed to be, sound-producing things.
Yeah.
So it was really kind of irritating for some of the students because I'm sitting in there, and this thing's going off, reading the screen, and it was very, very crude. Obviously, you didn't have a review mode. And,
oh yeah, but what an original! That's one I had not never heard of.
Yeah, so that's how I really got my start into programming. And before that, I started with a Texas Instruments TI-99/4A, and we did the same kind of a thing with that. And I moved to very, very temporarily a Radio Shack color computer, and then moved to the Commodore 64.
Big step forward.
Eric Baumann's screen reader.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, man, that's really where things got really interesting. I did quite a bit of programming on that, and a lot of learning, and just got into the whole BBS scene, and I used that for a number of years in the Commodore 128, and got into CPM programming, and just had a really, really good time as a kid, doing all of that, and really became quite proficient in that. And then I went to college, and
let's back up a little bit before we get you to college.
Okay.
When you started as a child, did they start Braille, teaching you Braille as a child?
Oh yes, yep.
And this was
a reader today, absolutely.
This was at the Arizona School for the Blind?
Yeah, Arizona State School for the Deaf and the Blind, yeah.
Well, they still had the deaf and blind together in the early 60s.
This was late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah. I graduated in 85. And so, and it was interesting because a lot of the, a lot of the deaf and the blind really would not talk, I mean, it was really like two different cultures, really.
It is difficult for a blind person to communicate with a deaf person.
Yeah. I sort of broke that paradigm, though, and felt that, hey, they're just as good as we are. Why aren't we communicating? And so I very much stood out like a sore thumb at ASDB because I was very different than many of the kids there. And, I'd go over and talk to the deaf kids and sign with them. And, in fact, some of my best friends at the school were deaf.
So you learned someone taught you the signs so that you could communicate with your hands to them.
I wasn't completely proficient, but, I knew finger spelling and I knew quite a bit of sign language. And so, I'd go over, and talk with them, and it was good. It actually was kind of challenging, and I liked that.
You know, I'm sure I've told this story before, but back years ago, they had in Texas, they had the deaf and the blind kids together in one school, and there was some sort of altercation in the gym. There was a little fight going on between the deaf and the blind kids, and the deaf kids left. That's whether that's true or not, I have absolutely no idea. But that's so you would go and communicate with these deaf kids because it was kind of a challenge for you. It was kind
of plus I really became very close friends with a lot of them, so I first thought it would be a real interesting challenge to learn sign language and learn to communicate with them.
Yeah.
I really was intrigued by it, and so I really. That was my first intro, why I wanted to do it. And then I really became pretty good friends with many of them. And
did they have you in the same classrooms?
No.
They had different, so there would be a teacher, it would be a first grade teacher for the deaf children and a first grade teacher for the blind children.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, no, they would not commingle. No.
Oh, it's interesting. I haven't run across that before. I just know that it is really difficult for blind people and deaf people to communicate, because you don't know their language. I guess you do, but I don't.
And I'm not really, really good. My wife is much better at it than I am. We'll get to that part of the story. But
okay. I tell you what, let's do, why don't we take a break, and we'll get you into junior high and high school and your what you did then. You told us a little bit about it, but obviously you've had well-fulfilled and a good life, seems to me. Jeff Bishop is our guest. I'm Phil Parton. Our little show is called Blind Like Me, and we'll be right back. Hang on.
The thing I like the best about the Blind Handyman List, great place to exchange information and gather ideas on anything to do with being a handyman around the house.
I found out how to fix my garbage disposal on the Handyman List, and it worked.
If you'd like to join the Blind Handyman List, send a blank email to blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
The thing I like about the Blind Handyman List, I'm the moderator, and I can delete you if I want to. So don't get out of line. Stay on topic.
That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. A trip to Walmart.
I wonder where the pharmacy is. It's somewhere over here. Oh, God, I've got my cane caught in something.
Pardon me, sir. I don't know how to tell you this, but the end of your cane is stuck in my...
Why bother shopping the big discount stores when you can shop from the comfort of your own home at BlindMySmart.com.
Hi, this is Dale Campbell, president of Blind My Smart. If you can't find what you're looking for today, check back tomorrow. We're adding new products every day.
Blind My Smart, with thousands of products at a completely accessible website. Our address is blindmysmart.com. Again, that's www.blindmysmart.com.
Jeff Bishop from Tucson, Arizona is our guest. Went to the Arizona School for the Blind and the Deaf, and they had both there, the deaf children and blind children. And I assume, Jeff, that you dormed, you domiciled in different places.
I did not, because I lived in Tucson.
You went home every day.
Yeah,
you were a day, one of those damn day students.
Yeah, exactly.
They
yeah.
got to go home every night, and they were just kind of there at lunch, and you'd see them in class, and then at night they were gone.
Yep.
And I always envied them, thought that would be a wonderful. And it was. It was a much better situation than... Because you got to be around some blind people, and you met some blind people, and you learned Braille and things like that. but you still had your life with your siblings and with your parents.
Yeah, I think that was really, really important for me because I was able to, you know, be around that environment, then also be around, just my family plus, you know, other people outside of that, out of that, and I think that's pretty.
Yeah, so
for me, it was very important.
Well, going to school for you was different, yet it was this almost the same as your brother that went to. He went to school, and you went to school. So you,
yeah,
was,
exactly.
You know,
yeah, it's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah. So Arizona School for the Blind. Do you think was it a good school? Did you think, was your experience there good? Do you think?
Yeah, I think it was actually. I would not, if I had a blind child now, I wouldn't send him there, but. I think at the time that I went, I think the school was very, very good. There were very, very good teachers. They were teaching Braille. They were really focused on the right things. I've gone back now and done, you know, like career type things and, you know, to talk to the kids and stuff like that. And man, it's a lot different.
Well, it's a different time. It's not the same as it was in the 70s.
No, not at all.
It's a different school. Most of the blind kids there, I would imagine, are multi-handicapped children.
Yes, that's right. And to be honest, you know, we really didn't have the technology to be able to mainstream students, you know, when I went to school. We do now, and we were beginning to get that technology. In fact, I utilized a lot of that technology later in my schooling, but more so in college because I didn't really have access to it, you know, in the 1983 to 85 time frame.
Yeah.
But now there's no excuse. I mean, we have all kinds of technology where you know, a blind child should be able to be, you know, put right into public schools. And, you know, the big thing, of course, is teaching Braille. And as long as you have really, really competent people doing that in the public school system, then I see no reason why a child should not be directly put into the public schools.
The only thing that I have seen in by a couple of kids that have gone to Lufkin ISD is that sometimes they become a little bit isolated from the other kids. I don't know if due to them.
Yeah, that's true. And I think a lot of that has to do with both the schools and the parents. I think that the parents really need to be involved in making sure that their child isn't isolated. You know, that is brought up, and that's hard though because they want to. Yeah. A lot of parents want to protect. You know, my child's blind, so I don't want her or him to ride a bike. You know, and my parents really were very much, you know, the opposite of it. In fact, at least once a month, I would go and get. You know, I have to go to the emergency room. Literally, when I was, you know, for a couple years there, I went to the emergency room at least 12 times a year, and. It actually was pretty funny because we got to a first name basis. In fact, they would say, "Okay, never mind. We'll fill out the paperwork later. Go ahead and get them stitched up."
Yeah.
And that was just that was just reality. I mean, you know, that was just the way things were. And I think that's why I am the person who I am today is because, you know, I was raised to be, you know, who I am as an individual, not a blind person, and was able to be the person that I am. Both good and bad as a child.
Well, it is a world, whether we like it or not, or whether we want to admit it or not, whether we can face up to it or not. It is a world of sighted people, and sighted is the normal, and we are to some extent abnormal. So we have to fit in their world. We can expect them to a certain extent, but mostly we have to adapt.
Yeah,
it's our job.
I mean, we have to learn Braille. We have to learn things a little bit differently, but for the most part, we have to conform to them and hope that through education that we can teach, you know, and bring to others that our needs as individuals, you know, especially technology related, you know, so that we can continue to thrive in the world. So.
And we have to learn those sighted social skills. You can't flip your hands in public, and you have to conform to certain dress codes, and you have to look at people when you talk to them, and even though you can't see them, you should look at them when you,
yes, exactly.
You know. So you have to. That's up to you. But it sounds like you had a very good childhood. Are you musically inclined to some extent?
Oh, I played the violin and I played the saxophone for a few years, but I'll tell you, not really. I was pretty good at it, but I wasn't. I don't pursue it anymore.
Okay,
it's not really something I really pursue.
Just a high school
for a while.
Little high school something like everybody, like lots of kids did.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Although I did it in elementary too, but it really wasn't something that I wasn't really interested in putting forth the effort to become really, really good.
And it takes effort.
It does.
To become.
And frankly, I just didn't have. It just wasn't in my deck of cards, you know?
I mean,
I'm really good at it, and some people aren't. So.
I would guess, without knowing anything, that you did academically well. You excelled at, your grades were good.
You know, my first couple of years in high school weren't, actually.
Really?
Yeah, and I think that was because of lack of maturity, as well as just trying to figure out who I was as a person. I was picked on quite a bit in school, and because I was very different, you know, and I think a lot of it also was maturity. And it wasn't really until about the second semester of my sophomore year that my grades really got, you know, really good, except for English. I never really got good grades in English. I'm not a. I've become a better writer, but I was not a very good writer. And I had a very, very difficult English teacher in high school, Miss Grendel, who now I worship the ground she walks on. She you know, you hated her then, but man, you cherish her now.
Even the name sounds tough, Miss Grendel.
Yeah,
I'll get
amazing.
You.
She had one hand and one hook.
Ooh, really?
And so the joke was that, you know, if we didn't watch it, she'd give us you know, a good left hook.
Good left hook, funny. That's good.
And she was tough. She was very, very tough, and didn't put up with anything, and graded very, very, very difficultly. And I really, you know, I had an opportunity to actually speak to her and actually email with her on the internet and actually give her a call one day and really thanked her. It's great that you can actually get back in touch with your teachers and really tell them, hey, you know what, you know, I didn't really think much of you then, you know, but you really had a major, major influence in my life. And Joanne Gately was two of my favorite teachers in high school. And they really played a very significant part in my life.
But in high school, computers had already captured your imagination, your fascination.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yep.
You realized that that computers were going to play some part in your vocation or what you were going to do the rest of your life. You knew that then, didn't you?
Yep, I pretty much did. And I was the only one in my high school class that was really into that. And I, you know, I was very, very technology focused, and I think that's part of the reason is because my direction was significantly different than many of them. In fact, it really kind of saddens me to now go back and look at, you know, where are the kids who I went to school with, you know, especially at ASDB, what are they doing now? And you look at especially the people who you thought would be really, really, really bright and really do things with their life, and they're not. And really that, I don't really like to focus on that because it's very, very sad.
It's funny how that works out. Some of the kids that you thought would go far and would far exceed your expectations for yourself have just sort of not been able to adapt to real life.
Yeah, it's scary to me. I don't know, it's just. Very, very tough, and I talk to them occasionally, and I try to talk to them about, hey, you know, what are you doing, and you know, it's just difficult. It all comes back to, you know, again, what I feel is how you were raised, how your parents raised you as a child, and I really think that's very, very critical.
Well, and how you look at yourself as a blind person. A lot of
that's true. Yeah.
Being blind just inhibits. Not only are people inhibited by the fact that they're blind, but they inhibit themselves.
But I think parents can direct a lot of that.
Oh yeah, yeah, they can, and you can. But you got to realize that very few times was I rejected for a job or something I wanted to do because I was blind.
Yeah.
I was turned down a lot of times because I was a smartass and because I because they knew I was a troublemaker and because they knew that I couldn't take directions. I wouldn't. But only a couple of times can I remember that I know somebody thought, well, I don't think Phil can do that because he can't see. And you got to get past all that before your life can be fulfilled or can be good. So high school and you were doing this Morse code thing intrigues me. We're going to have to talk more about that one of these days.
Okay.
Probably off the air, because that's one I had never run across that. I've run across a lot of blind people who got into computers early, but no one had thought of that Morse code. What a great idea.
Well, really, it was something that was thought of by a very good and close friend of mine named Chris McBride, actually. He was actually the one that developed it, because I didn't really have the skills to do it.
Yeah.
And he was the high school genius computer geek, and he actually worked as a student teacher's assistant in the computer lab.
Uh-huh.
And he said he went to the administration and said, "Hey, I can make it happen." And so he and I worked together on making it happen, and now he actually went to work for Microsoft and is doing quite well for himself.
But there was a computer lab at the school for the blind?
No, this was in
college.
No, there were no real computers at ASDB when I went there.
Yeah.
Now that changed pretty quickly after I left, but no, this was actually at Cholla High School, and so all the computers were basically these I think they were PDP 11 terminals, basically just a screen and a keyboard.
That's the way everybody thought things ought to be, the big server and the terminals.
Exactly.
Yep. That's the way they did things back then. So you got out of high school. What did you think? What did you have any? You knew you were going to do something with computers, so.
Oh, yeah. I knew that for sure. So I went to Pima Community College, and I went there for 2 years. And actually, in 1986, I met my would actually turn out to be my wife, and then we started dating, and then she went on a mission for the deaf for the Mormon Church.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and so she and I would communicate quite a bit, and I'd write and she'd tape, and we'd send letters back and forth at least once or twice a week. And
when you say, now, in the mid-'80s, you were born 57?
No, 66.
66?
Yeah.
2006. Okay, I was really off. So this is the you were about 20, 21, college, young college fellow.
Yeah.
Then, and so she is not deaf.
Nope.
And she is perfectly sighted. I mean, she's a sighted lady.
Yep.
And how did, and so she went off to teach deaf people in where? I mean, in...
Well, she actually went to Fresno, California, and then to North Carolina. She actually got transferred to North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And she already knew sign language because she was studying it. And it was kind of funny because we really didn't... I'll tell the story.
Okay.
I was, of course, interested in communicating with the deaf.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought, well, as an elective, I'm going to take a sign language class in college. And so I was sitting in the class talking with the instructor, and my guide dog, Sonny, was sitting at my feet. And in comes this girl. And Sonny sees her and just takes off and runs after her.
Wow.
Carrie was, in fact, in many ways still is. A pretty shy person. And Sonny ran over there. Now, Sonny was a shepherd. So, some people have kind of a fear of shepherds.
Yeah.
And Sonny went over there and jumped up on her shoulders, because she's about 5'1", jumped up on her shoulders and started licking her all over her
face. And scared her to death.
Well, yeah, or just shocked her, really, because, you're walking into a classroom, and this dog just, runs after you and jumps up on your shoulders and starts licking you all over. And so she brings Sonny back to me, and I didn't see her again for 2 or 3 months. And then I had to go over 2 or 3 months later. I had to go over to disabled student resources to work on getting materials for my class for college.
Uh-huh.
And she was there, and we met, and we talked, and she skipped a couple of classes, and we talked for about 4 hours over there. And there was this woman who would come in and write a saying on the board, on this chalkboard, and then people would sign it. And she'd do this every day. And people would sign with their first and last name. Well, when Carrie left, I asked somebody, hey, who was that? You know, what was her last name? And so I got her last name, and I went home and I called information and got her phone number, because I thought she lived in Tucson, and turned out she lived in a little town outside of Tucson called Sarita.
Okay.
And asked her out on a date, and she told me no. So,
really?
Anyway, we kept pursuing that.
Did she give a reason for rejecting you, for telling you no?
It wasn't because I was blind or anything. It was more based on a religious issue.
Okay.
But that was fine, you know, and that was fine. And then about 9 months later, we started dating, and now we're married, and we have two kids. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Now, have you become a Mormon?
I did, actually. I actually grew up, one of my best friends when I was growing up, Travis Butler, who also went to ASDB but then went to mainstream, was LDS. And I grew up around a lot of LDS people. And I really didn't have a real strong religious background growing up. My parents weren't really religious at that time. And I already knew a lot about the church, and actually it really intrigued me.
Yeah.
And so I really independently... in fact, I even told Carrie. I says, you know, I said I don't want us to communicate at all during the time that I'm investigating the church, however long that process takes, because I don't want that to be we weren't dating at that time or anything like that. And I told her I don't want that to be a factor in my decision.
Yeah, you want to make those decisions independent of
exactly. And so I did, and it took quite a while, and my parents weren't too happy about that, but.
Oh, well.
That's okay. You know, when you're an adult, you can make those decisions. So.
Parents get unhappy about all kinds of things.
All kinds of things,
times.
Yeah.
So you did 2 years at this junior college.
I did. And then I had an opportunity come up where I was able to interview and go to work for a company by the name of Interactive Information Systems. And they did programming for the manufacturing industry. And... So I got the job there and started programming there and learned a lot. I was using Braille then. I was using a Versa Braille 2 Plus at that time. And, of course, JAWS for Windows really wasn't, of course, you know, really Windows wasn't out at all at that point. So it was all Braille at that time. And we were all on a VAX VMS system. Doing all of our programming, and it was actually pretty easy to do then because everything was row and column based. So, you know, when you design screens, you could say, okay, you know, I want this at position, you know, row 4, column 8. You can't do that anymore these days. But so actually programming back then was relatively easy from a blind person's perspective for doing lineup and screen layout and things like that.
Easier than it is now.
Oh, much easier.
Yeah.
Much easier than now, absolutely, yeah. Really, it's very, very difficult now to.
This was pre-DOS, or this was.
Well, DOS was around then. In fact, I got my first IBM computer in 1987, and it was running DOS then. And so we had you had JAWS for DOS, and you had Vocalize and ASAP were the main three players at that time.
I didn't realize that there was a JAWS back then.
Yeah, JAWS for DOS.
And this was
JAWS for DOS back then was very, very big and bulky, and so it was very difficult at times to be able to load a screen reader and then load another application, because by the time you loaded JAWS, you know, you were down to 420K of memory.
Yeah, and JAWS had to have some sort of separate, like, deck talk or something.
Exactly. Yep.
To make it talk.
Yeah.
I miss my deck talks. I lost both of them in a lightning strike.
Oh, yeah. And, well, we had a lightning experience back in 1986. In fact, it was the day before I joined the Mormon Church, funny enough, and destroyed basically all electronic equipment in the house. Two direct hits the same night.
Yeah, people think that's impossible. I had two direct hits within 6 months of each other.
Yep.
So I was losing the neutral on my electricity. I didn't realize it at that time, but and so you didn't get a 4-year degree.
No, I intended to continue my education, and in fact, I still am. But then, I started working, and then Carrie and I were married in 1988, and I'm actually still. when you go to work and support a family, it's kind of difficult to do that, but.
Yeah.
So, no, I don't, but I have quite a number of years of almost 20 years now of experience. So.
Well, I'm sure you know. I do know blind people who've gone to college and gotten a nice 4-year degree, or even gone to graduate school, and are still sitting on their parents' front porch.
Yep, that's
so,
true.
So college education, while it is a wonderful thing to have, does not guarantee either a blind person or a sighted person.
Or a sighted person, that's right.
Anything. You know, nope. I met a girl last night working. We went to Chili's and ate, and this girl was talking about when I was in college. And so I just asked her, you have a college degree and you're working here? And she said, well, yeah, because this job pays more than any other job I could find in my field right now.
Wow.
She was
pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, waiting tables at Chili's. Probably makes $100 a night, though, you know.
Yeah.
All right, let us take a little break, and we want to come back and talk about what you're doing now, and besides raising children and being in what I perceive to be a wonderful marriage.
Yep.
Jeff Bishop is our guest from Tucson, Arizona, and I'm Phil Parr, and our show's called Blind Like Me, and we'll be right back. Hang on.
A website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now, with this week's Blind Sight, here's Tim Cummings.
Are you a person that has either a dog or a cat or fish or whatever for pets, and you need to get pet supplies or pet food? Well, you should take a look at www.petdiscounters.com. It's a very accessible website. If you've got like a pet hermit crab, I don't know how many people have pet hermit crabs, but they have supplies for pet hermit crabs. If you've got a reptile like a snake or whatever and you're looking for cages or supplies or whatever you want for your pet, you should check it out. I'd give it a screen reader friendliness rating of a 9. Again, that's www.petdiscounters.com. For Blind Sights, this is Tim Cummings saying, keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sights.
All right, as the Car Talk guys say, the third half of Blind Like Me. We'll get somebody will let us know that there are only two halves. But anyway, the third half of Blind Like Me, Jeff Bishop from Tucson, Arizona. I've never met Jeff, only emailed with him and talked on the telephone, but I perceive a well-adjusted, happy individual. He seemed very well-adjusted and very, very content.
Well, thank you.
I just get that feeling talking to you.
Yeah.
Now, you went to work for this company in after your 2-year stint there at the junior college, and
yep.
Are you still working for that same?
No,
same
then I left and moved to California for about a year, and I worked for Management Information Technology and did programming for Disney Corporation.
Oh yeah,
yeah. We wrote a system to. A budget tracking system for their rides, and so worked there for quite a year. But I call that my growing up year. I really did a lot of growing up there. My wife and I really kind of struggled in California, and I was still pretty immature as a person. Then really kind of kicked my butt into gear and really changing me as who I was as an individual.
But she went to California with you. You were married and
yep. And, uh-huh. And I was thinking, you know, I was making pretty low salary in Tucson, and I was thinking, oh wow, I'll make $10,000 more a year in California, and that would be great, you know. And it actually turned out I was actually making more money after making my apartment, you know, my rent payment. I was actually making more money in Tucson than I did in California. And you know, it's funny how you think that money is really the most important thing, and you learn rather quickly that it's not, and it's never driven me since.
Well, because California's an expensive place to live.
Yeah, well, and the culture's a lot different. I mean, we met a lot of nice people, but it's also very, very difficult, and it's definitely an environment that my wife and I decided that we would not raise our children in. And so my guide dog Sonny passed away in California, and I went and got another dog, and I came back, and the day that I got back and went back to work, I was laid off. And
so you went to guide dog. Where'd you go? CNI. Where did you?
Yeah, CNI. Yep.
And got another dog.
Yep.
And the day that you got back, they said, Jeff, golly, nobody enjoys a joke more than we do, but that's it.
That's it. That's right.
That's kind of sad.
And then they found out that while I was at the school, my wife was pregnant. So,
well, a lot of
first child. So the world just sort of came tumbling around us.
I was going to say, a lot of things happened to old Jeff there. And
yeah, it was rather difficult for us. And so we decided where we're going to go home. We're going to go back to Tucson, and I sort of went back, and I didn't have a very good ending experience at Interactive Information Systems, so I thought my chances of getting back in there were probably, you know, nil or nothing. But I had a really, really long heart-to-heart talk with many people there, and they actually said, "Okay, we're gonna bring you back for 3 months," and.
Your leaving this company was not amicable.
Well, it was. I mean, they had no issues with me. It was more of a maturity issue and
on your part.
It was me. It was me entirely.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Yeah. It was entirely me. And it had nothing to do with whether I was blind or not. It was just me it was me basically being an ass. Basically what it was.
That'll happen.
Yeah, exactly. When you're 20 years old, that can happen.
You don't know a lot when you're 20 years old, but you don't know anything, and
exactly.
So you think you do.
Nope.
So these folks said, we're going to bring you back for 3 months. If that works out, we'll keep you.
And I stayed there for the next almost 6 years.
Good.
And
now, what did they do? What was their thrust?
It was the same company. But they changed names.
Uh-huh.
From Interactive Information Systems to Avalon Software.
And they were programming, you were doing programming?
Programming in database languages, in Oracle, basically.
Uh-huh.
And did some really, really intriguing things there. Actually wrote a barcode application to generate barcode labels with laser printers for the automotive industry.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. That was sort of interesting to have a blind person trying to debug that.
That's cool. I like it.
It was neat that they gave me that opportunity to do that. And then I actually got into training and did all of their programming and development training for them.
Yeah, what size company was this we're talking about here? Yeah.
What was what?
What size company? Is this a big company?
No, it was... Well, when I left, there was probably maybe 60 people, 50 people.
Oh, yeah. So one-on-one, lots of one-on-one, and you knew everybody there. And,
pretty much, yeah, pretty much. And the only reason I left was because the company was, they came right out and told us that, you know, we have enough money to pay you next week, and that's it.
Whoa.
And so it was either find another job really, really fast, or, you know, not.
So you've been through some of those maturing experiences of life.
Oh, yeah. So I found out that Microsoft Corporation was coming to town. And I knew, of course, a number of people that worked at Microsoft for my involvement with, just being around technology.
Uh-huh.
So I contacted them, and I actually, hold on a minute, I'm sorry.
That's an alarm to tell you to do something.
That is my wife's.
I love it. That's got to be a cell phone.
It is a cell phone, and I'm going to let it, because I have no idea where it is in here.
Okay. There it goes.
There it goes.
It's got to be a cell phone.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. I love it. We have all kinds of rings on cell phones nowadays.
Yeah, we sure do.
They don't just buzz. All right, so you left this company because they couldn't pay you anymore, and Microsoft was coming to town.
So you went over there. And I had an interview, and I was hired by Microsoft, and I worked for them until they decided to leave Tucson, and... which, of course, had all kinds of political issues with that. I mean, the city went crazy because, you know, they thought Microsoft was here for the long term. And so I worked for Microsoft for about 2.5 years and then worked for Keen Corporation until they got bought. at least the division that I was working in got bought by another company. And so then I went to work for the University of Arizona, and I've been there ever since.
Well, I think it's the way things are done now. Nobody goes, like I've told the story several times, my father worked for the National Biscuit Company, Nabisco, for 47 years.
Yeah, doesn't happen anymore.
People don't do that anymore, you know?
Not unless you get into, like, a state job or federal job. But, again, there's not even any kind of guarantee in that either.
So you're at the university, you are their access technology specialist, or what?
I'm a principal programmer on our student information system, which is entirely written in Microsoft-based technologies and web-based technologies. So no, actually, I don't work with access technology as far as a career goes, but I'm still doing development and programming. But the university tends to come to me for, or at least many departments do, only because I use the technology and I'm pretty good at it for many things. So it tends to be something that at times I'm very heavily involved with, but more so on the programming and development side of things. I actually lead a team of developers. And drive the process of getting our code done and completed. So that's what I do at the university.
And this is student information.
So basically tracking, from the point of the student being a prospect all the way through being an applicant, and then actually being brought into the university as to be a student. I mainly work on the actual administrative portion of that system. The people who actually work at the university and maintain the data in the system.
So you're not as involved in actual hands-on anymore as you are in making sure it gets done.
No, I'm still a lot of hands-on actually, but I also direct a lot of the effort too. I really don't want to be a manager necessarily. I really want to stay close to technology if I possibly can. So my manager above me handles the day-to-day, like can I have vacation time and all that, nonsense and reviews, although I have a say in that kind of thing.
The minutiae of all.
Yeah,
that.
I mean I'm really not interested in that, I want to stay close to technology and the people that make technology happen.
Being a manager oftentimes is a thankless, thankless
job.
I
would be bored to death, I think, if I was just doing that type of thing. It's not.
But if the university will have a blind student, and they will quiz you about what they need.
Oh, yeah, it happens frequently, sure.
And this is the University of Arizona?
University of Arizona.
University of Arizona is its main campus there at Tucson?
Yep. Yeah, there's University of Arizona, and then in Phoenix it's Arizona State University.
But the same under the same umbrella.
No, they're two different universities.
Okay, true. University of Arizona. Well, sounds like your job-wise, pretty secure.
Yeah, I think so. I'm really happy, and I'm really happy in what I do, and I really enjoy the people with who I work. And I really do.
And you enjoy those children also, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I can tell.
David and Brian are. David is 15 and Brian is 12, and they're just really, really. They're kids too, but they're really special. They can be. They're growing up and they're becoming teenagers, and so you've got to deal with that level of. Brings back memories to what you were like.
And both of them have normal vision.
Normal vision, yes.
Yeah, so it's almost time for a car for that oldest boy.
Well, no, he probably will not drive. My kids are very opposite of each other. My younger child, Brian, is in the gifted and talented education program in school.
Uh-huh.
And my son, David, is classified mild retarded. And
so he's probably not going to want to drive.
No, well, no, he'd want to drive. I just don't know if it would be safe for him to.
Yeah.
Just from be able to react, the reaction time is really the more.
Bless his heart.
So that's. So it really adds an interesting dynamic to our house.
Oh, man, it would. It would.
Is very, very talented in his education, and then you have one who isn't as much.
Who's having some problems.
Yeah, and that's okay, because that's who they are, and you love them just as much, both together. And so that really is irrelevant. It just makes for a really interesting thing between the two children.
Yeah,
I guess is what I'm saying. You know, that. Obviously, David's work is a lot easier than, say, Brian's work, and so that just makes for just some very difficult sometimes parenting when they two fight about that whole thing.
We have completely exhausted our time. In fact, gone a little bit over. You've been a most interesting guest, and I applaud you. Look forward someday possibly sitting down and visiting with you and meeting your children.
Thank you, Phil.
Enjoyed it very much, and I'll be back in touch.
Okay.
What a nice fella, Jeff Bishop. From Tucson, Arizona. Remind you real quickly about our November gathering. It is the 3rd, 4th. We go home on the 5th, and we go home on the 6th. It's a Thursday, Friday. Friday, I'll have it right here someday. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We come in on Friday. We leave on Monday. It's in November. If you think you might be interested, we'd love to have you. You can get a hold of me at phil@philpar.net. phil@philpar.net, and I'll send you the information. You come in November. We're going to play music, do a lot of talking, do a couple of radio shows, and no motivational speakers, I promise, other than Henry Casting. Thanks much for listening. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.